into it. But you're right, we've got not AC/DC, got AC/AC.
AC and AC.
So here we go, guys. Welcome to another episode of the Raw Knowledge Podcast with myself, as ever, your host, Alex Connor. And today I'm back with a wise, a wonderful, a very creative and talented guest by, yes, his initials are AC, but Mr. Alex Kersen, a.k.a. maybe Spaz, we could get that in there. I'm sure that will be explained. But, mate, thanks for joining me. I appreciate
it. Hey, thanks for having me there, Alex. Hey, it's good to finally meet you again, because we met, what, 7, 8 years ago, I think it was, at a cafe in Surfers Paradise.
I was going to say, it's always
good to
go back.
We've kept in touch this whole time, and we've, you know, circled back around, and here we are to have a chat, so I'm excited to be here.
Awesome, dude. And a lot has changed. I'm glad you brought that up, because I think it's always important to mention, like, where you met someone, or where you crossed paths, or, you know, if there has been a bit of a journey, like, what's gone on, and that's kind of what we're going to unpack today, right? So,
yep.
I guess to set the scene for people, Alex, you know, tell us what you do, but more importantly, why you do it. Give us a bit of a synopsis and then we can go from there.
Yeah, okay. So I'm primarily a videographer. You know, I've been creating videos for a number of different projects and brands for the last sort of 12 years or so. It started very young, at the age of 12, making videos using video games, and that's how I learned my craft. And then went from that into nightclub videography, and then into, you know, weddings and the Monaco Grand Prix, Paris Fashion Week, you name it. I've filmed a huge amount of events around the world, and I've got an amazing team that I do it with. But now I'm the CEO of EDM TV Network, which is Electronic Dance Music Television Network. And we are a new app launching on a number of streaming apps around the world. Apple TV, Roku, Google Chromecast, Amazon Fire, PlayStation, Xbox. We have all the top record labels in the electronic dance music industry signed into EDM TV. So we've got over 100 hours of music video content, interviews with DJs, live sets, anything you could possibly imagine inside of the dance music world. And it's been my job over the last 7.5 years to curate that content, build the apps with my team. Based out of New York, LA, all over New Zealand and Australia. And now, yeah, we're getting ready for a big launch. So it's pretty damn exciting.
Yeah.
And why? Why did I do that?
Yes,
so that was the main question. It sort of became, there was a point in my life where I was doing all of these videos for all of these clients, all of these other people, and they were getting the benefit from that video. So like it was showcasing their business, they would get more business, they would sell more products, they would, you know, sell more tickets to their events or whatever it was. And I didn't really see any of that profit from what I was doing for everyone else. Yeah, I was getting my name out there, and yeah, I was getting more experience and that kind of stuff, but I wasn't really like getting the pudding, if you know what I mean. And I thought to myself, man, why do I have like at the time 700 videos on YouTube, and YouTube's getting like 50% of this advertising revenue. Why am I not getting all of that advertising revenue and all the other revenue from all the other products that I'm promoting? So I thought, damn, what if I had my own platform? And I actually was at an after party and everyone was playing music videos via YouTube. And it was horrendous, man. Like, you know, oh, let's play this, and like, yay, and let's play this, yay. But
it's
then,
very, like,
and
disjointed.
then let's play this, and then you get hit with an ad, and everyone's like, no. And in an after party environment, you need someone to essentially DJ the flow of the music because it's very important. And we tried everything, man. Like, and there was just nothing to watch. And I thought, why the hell isn't there just a place where you can hit one button and it just plays awesome music videos, and that's it. So I made it.
That's fucking cool. And usually that's where some of the best ideas come from, is you solve a problem that exists not only for yourself, but obviously for a large population as well. I want to go back because it's exciting and it's interesting how we reconnected now for the podcast as things are kind of coming to a head, if you will, with the app, and that's very exciting. I want to delve into that a bit more, but I want to go back to the start.
Yeah.
Were there any protagonists when you were younger in terms of events, people that inspired you to kind of go down this journey of, first of all, I guess videography, but then also getting creative in the music scene? Or was it something that you very much fell into? And then obviously we can talk about some of the...
Yeah, well, now that you mentioned that, you want to go right back to the very start. So let's go to the very start. So I was like a professional video gamer and I was very shy. I didn't have much social skills whatsoever. Mm-hmm. Like no success with women. Like I was just a nerdy guy playing video games, working in IT. And then I was literally playing World of Warcraft one night with my friend, and I was really sad. And he's like, "Why are you sad tonight, man?" And I said, "Dude, I just have no social skills. It just, my life sucks, you know?"
Yeah.
And he said, "Oh man, you got to read this book."
Ah, yes. This is going to be good. Is it called The Game?
That was the second one he sent me. Yep. The first one was actually The Mystery Method.
Ah, yes.
The Mystery Method. So he sent me The Mystery Method and he sent me The Game. And I read them one after the other. And you know what the book tells you? Move out of home. Go out four nights a week. Approach like 30 groups of people.
Project Hollywood.
Say this in this order. And you know, I did exactly that. I moved out of home. I went out four nights a week. I was build the avatar. Who was the avatar?
And that's
where Spaz sort of came from, but we'll get to that. Mm. So I was going out and I was trying all of these openers, and I was honestly for the first 2-3 months having zero success. Like,
as you do.
Hey, did you guys see the fight outside? No. Hey, did you guys see the fight outside? Fuck off. Hey, did you see the fight outside? Back turn. Hey, did you see the fight outside?
It's cringe going back and thinking about it.
That's what it was though, man. And
whereabouts specifically?
This is in Wellington.
Okay, good.
This is in Wellington.
Not a bad playground though.
No, because Wellington has the most nightclubs, bars, cafes, restaurants per capita in the world. Yeah, so within, there's like
the culture
200 of them in a 2-kilometer radius. Yeah, so you can easily go to like 10 to 15 venues in a night in Wellington, where you can't really do that anywhere else.
No.
Like, yeah, so it was an amazing stomping ground now that I think about it. But to sort of move forward, I was going out for a few months and I'd bought the clothes and started dressing different and you know, the whole peacocking thing. And, you know, then I went to a club called Super Club 3, and it was like a club night at a big 4-story thing. Mm. And I actually like learned how to dance. So I flew to Melbourne to learn the Melbourne Shuffle because like I failed with this girl because I couldn't dance, and she like dumped me on the dance floor, and I was like, oh my God, I need to handle this problem. So one of my friends that I actually play World of Warcraft with, hey Snazzy, I ran a Melbourne Shuffle class in Melbourne. I went and stayed with him and he taught me how to do it. And then I won the Melbourne Shuffle competition at Sensation White in Melbourne in 2009.
Did not know that.
Yeah, so I turned from zero to
I was going to say, basically when you turn your attention to it, it's like, watch out, you're going to do it well.
Yeah. So I learned how to dance, came back, and then I'm at the Super Club 3. And I meet my business partner, who I've now worked with for 13 years, but it's this guy with a camera. And I started dancing around and, you know, acting like an idiot or whatever. And then I got his card and I messaged him the next day and I said, hey guys, when's the video coming out for Super Club 3? Mm. And he said, oh, well, we're a little bit understaffed at the moment, but we should, you know, have the video up by Thursday. And I said, well, I'm a video editor, check out my website. I sent him my gaming videos, and he said, these are fantastic, come in for a coffee. So I came in for the coffee, showed them my shit, and he said, this is cool, but can you film? And I said, nope, but I can try. So he gave me this camera, and it's like a tape camera, but it was like the best Sony camera that you could get at the time, I think.
Yeah.
And sent me to the dingiest, darkest nightclub, and everyone was like chewing their faces off, and I had to make it look awesome. But because I did the gaming videos, I had an idea of what to do. And I made this club video, and it just... They loved it, so they got me to do it again and again and again, and you know, all of a sudden I had a reason to go out, like to all these clubs, because I became a photographer and a nightlife videographer, and then I had a reason to talk to everyone instead of, hey, do you guys see the fight outside? It was, hey, do you guys want a photo? Oh, sure, yes. Yeah. And so every single set or group of people just blew open because I had a purpose.
Other than meeting them.
Other than or trying to chat them up. Yeah. So that was kind of like the beginning of everything. That's how it started.
That is interesting. And then I guess fast forward from there, you came to Australia. You were doing, I imagine, jobs at the time. Because I remember when we met, actually, you guys, or at least two of you guys, were trying to be in disguise, I think, at the coffee club, or like had a wig on. One of you guys had a wig on. And I was like, what do you guys do? And you were all secretive. And I think the other guys were real defensive for some reason. And you were like pretty open. You're like, oh, no, don't be a dick, man. Like, it's all good. And I was just, because I'm a curious soul, right? See, and after my fucking time doing gaming, I'm just like, I'm going to fucking open these guys. I just want to know what they're doing. I'm nosy, right?
Yeah.
And then you were like, oh, we're actually fucking doing this. And I'm like, fuck, that's sick, man. And like, don't tell him too much. And I was just like, oh, it's all right. I'm going to go tell him.
Yeah, it was COVID operation. But at the time we had a, so the nightclub thing was it was called Snapstar, and we had like 80 photographers and videographers around the world that shot all these amazing events, and we dominated the Gold Coast. We went to LA and dominated Hollywood. You know, we took over, became official videography and photography at, you know, Playhouse, Supper Club, all the top clubs in Hollywood. I was going out 7 nights a week. Mm. This is before I met you. Then after that sort of chapter, we realized that all of the photos and videos and stuff in the nightclubs, all the stuff they got, the traffic was hot girls. Mm. Like, everyone wanted to see the hot girls in all of our content. Mm. So we were like, why don't we just focus on that? Mm. So that's where the Babe Method was formed. So Babe Method was essentially a website. It had all the hottest lingerie and swimwear models from around the world that we shot in exotic locations. And Dee, our photographer, who actually passed away a few years ago in a motorcycle accident, God bless his soul, but he was wearing a bit of a wig because he was a bit older, and he's lost his hair, and it was kind of like his way of like himself transforming into an avatar.
Yeah, you know, because I wasn't sure whether he was trying to just like, it was that, or whether it was like undercover, because I'm like, are these guys trying to hide?
Yeah, but I mean, he was a massive photographer in the sports scene in New Zealand, so him going from sports and professional environment to like lingerie and swimming models, he kind of had to like switch it up to, you know, sort of get into a different frequency. And I understand why he did it now. But yeah, Dee was just one of the craziest guys I've ever met, and God bless his soul. But, you know, that's why he had the wig.
Yeah, interesting story, man. So I guess something as well that I'd like to know, apart from the obvious, because this is a big question, right? In such an era where media is everywhere, you know, we are bombarded with it, and, you know, it's like, how do you grab the attention? How do you get it, right? Well, it's got to be a certain angle or an edit or the way it's put together, right? You tell a story with it or whatever you want to say.
Yeah, yeah.
What does it take to create and curate those videos, especially at the time, that dominate the industry, apart from the obvious, you need good skills in the video editing? But what were the main things you were doing differently that allowed you to dominate the field? Like, were you using different techniques? Were you coming at it from a different angle? Were you editing it differently?
Well, yeah, like, that's the thing. At the time, and I mean, we really dominated and took over. Like, at the time, models were either getting paid by photographers to do shoots, or some of the richer girls were paying photographers to do shoots, and they're paying for like covers on magazines and that kind of stuff. And we just came, we actually raised, we had a bigger vision for the whole industry. Like, you know, if we had kept doing Babe Method, we would be OnlyFans right now. You know, we would be them. And Playboy actually offered to buy us twice, and we declined both times. So we got to that point where we were literally turning heads at the highest of levels. But we got some investment capital, and we just started shooting all the models for free, paying for all the hair and makeup, amazing accommodation, and all these dope locations. And photographers were like harassing me, like, how are you getting these awesome locations? So we had the locations, we had it snowballed really hard. Like, overnight, we were shooting all the biggest models in the Gold Coast, Melbourne and Sydney. And you know, how are you getting these locations? How are you getting these models? Who's paying for this? Blah, 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 you know? And it was all because we had that larger vision, you know, build the brand first, and then bring in the events, the experiences, the products and everything once you've got this following, right? And this is back when the Facebook algorithm was much more favorable. You know, Facebook early days, we'd post a video and it would go crazy. And then people would follow the page, and overnight we had 250,000 followers on Facebook. So, you know, what were we doing differently? Well, I mean...
Just a quick one, guys, before we carry on with the podcast. For any of you who are interested in taking your health and physique to the next level, and you want to remove the guesswork, you're not quite getting the progress that you want, you're not seeing what you want to see in the mirror, and you're not feeling like you're really moving in the right direction, then click the link in the bio below, the apply button, where you can contact me. We can organize a free consultation no obligation, and discover whether it's a good fit as coach and client. All right, back to it.
You know, what were we doing differently? Well, I mean, there wasn't a lot of video going on because there wasn't really like that much of a platform for it. Instagram didn't exist yet. So Facebook, it was all on Facebook and we had our own website. So we put like a little teaser on Facebook and then we get all the traffic through to the website. And because we'd managed websites on a greater level with Snapstar, like we were able to, you know, curate it all into a single point, have it very presentable, and it was professional. And you know, all of a sudden we're getting 20 messages a day from models wanting to shoot with us. Hey, how do I get on Babe Method? How do I get on Babe Method? So it just snowballed from there.
Yeah, you created such a demand.
Yeah.
And like you said, especially in a time where, and it's important to note, it wasn't like it is now. You know, Instagram wasn't there. You know, people weren't as TikTok, all these things, Snapchat, it didn't exist. So I think people who were almost not just first to market, but were doing it in, like you said, a really presentable, streamlined way, were really tapping into that. And again, the market is just, I mean, sex sells, right? In any way, shape or form.
Pretty much. Look at any commercial anywhere, you know.
I mean, look at OnlyFans now.
Look at OnlyFans now, exactly.
I mean, my friend's been on here. He's the top earner. And, you know, amazing, unbelievable revenue. Like,
yeah,
ridiculous.
Yeah, I know
and
he's, a girl making
like
over 100K a month.
Started as a videographer, funnily enough. So
right, there you go.
You guys will actually get on. I'll have to introduce you. But I wanted to ask as well, what were the biggest challenges at that point that you guys faced as you were growing, and even just in general? Obviously you didn't have a problem getting exposure and models, but what were some of the biggest challenges and what you sort of learned from
I mean, to be honest, we hadn't really like done this. No one had done anything like this before. This was like a completely new way of doing it. So it was kind of like jumping out of a plane and building your own parachute on the way down, you know? So all of a sudden, like something would pop up and people would ask questions like, oh, what do I need to bring? What do I need? Like, what time is the, like all this happening? We thought, fuck, we're gonna need like someone to handle operations here. Otherwise, you know, we're not gonna have enough time to do everything. So like, it was kind of like we had all these building blocks one step at a time. As soon as a problem came up, we're like, okay, let's put a system in place to handle that problem. And it's kind of like that with any kind of business, really. But yeah, I mean, sometimes I've heard every excuse of why a model didn't show up to a shoot. Like, dog ate my homework, tire blew up, you know, I forgot I had to pick up my sister from the airport today. Like, you know, it's crazy. So it's like there's all these little problems, but I mean, nothing really like major. But one thing I will say is that like once you've got something going good, everyone
wants
a piece in it and wants to get in on it. So it became a case of like how to separate, I guess, the lions from the wolves, if you know what I mean.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was kind of the most difficult thing, I think.
Yeah, people who were not just riding for the coattails, but actually either wanted to contribute or be a part of it genuinely.
Yeah, and some people that came along were amazing, you know, like I met some of the most amazing friends, lifelong friends, you know, through that process. And I think I wouldn't really change a thing, to be honest.
Which is, in a way, part of the organic journey. I mean, because would it be the same, you know? We always look back in hindsight and go, oh, if I knew what I knew back then, but maybe you wouldn't be where you are now if you'd made that decision.
Oh, and I realized that early on. Every time something happens, it happens for a reason, and you just have to say, okay, Mr. Universe, I accept, you know, whatever has happened here, and I'm going to figure out how to get past it and move on. But, yeah, the Babe Method journey came to an end in 2016. It was just too many chiefs and not enough Indians, too many cooks in the kitchen, so to speak.
Yeah.
And so I kind of went off on my own for a little while and started Catnip.
Yes. So let's talk about that then, if that's the next chapter, if you will.
Yeah, that was the next chapter of the story. So I kind of figured, you know, I'm filming all these models and they're like, what do you want me to do? And I said, oh, pretend you're like a cat, because like there's something sexy about the feline energy, right? Like there's something sexy about it. And I did this for like 2 years before I even thought of this. Like, it's just something I did on shoots, and they'd like pull the curtains, then like stuff, and it would just create like good content. You know,
it was a good metaphor for them to get into poses.
Yes,
that
it was, and like in, you know, cats pounce and you know they purr and whatever, right? Basically, I had an epiphany one day where I thought, oh my god, I want to continue this train that I had going with Babe Method, but I want to do it in a different way. I wanted to be have a different business model, and I just had a different vision for it. Because I was my own, chief amongst the chiefs in that tribe, but now I'm on my own. I can do things my own way. So I was like, okay, how am I going to do this? And I was literally at a party with my friends, and my friend's name is Kat. Her name's Kat, and I told her about my idea.
Convenient.
And she said, why don't you call it Catnip? And like my brain just exploded. I saw it all in my head, the parties, the events, the girls, the ears, the products, the perfume. And I just I just got out my phone and just started writing notes. And I just
furiously writing notes.
Pages and pages of like, cat, I found every cat pun that you could imagine, and just put this list of like this dream list together. And
what's your best cat pun?
Oh man, I mean,
on top of your
head. Always say something's perfect. You know, these are the hashtags, man, you know. It's Thursday, Thursday.
Jesus.
It's Cataday, guys. Oh. Hashtag Cataday. But, you know,
it's a catastrophe. That's all I'm thinking about.
Oh,
now.
Man, it goes on. Like, you could go forever. But it kind of put that to the side for a year. And it's something, and I was like, I want to do this thing, but I don't know how I want to do it yet. But I kept manifesting on it and started, like, mucking around with logo design and that kind of stuff. But then I kind of got sucked back into the Babe Method world, but in a different way. And I started working with Maxim and Playboy. Mm. So I went back to the United States, put Catnip to the idea of Catnip to the side, and I was doing all the videography and photography for like Maxim
was
USA.
Was that something you applied for? Or did someone outreach to you?
No, that's
a contact.
Some of the contacts that I met via Babe Method were like, hey, and even one of the founders of Babe Method was like, hey, this is what we're doing now. Like, let's get the band back together. So, and we did it on a bigger scale. And that's where we filmed, you know, the Super Bowl, the Maxim Hot 100, all the Playboy Halloween parties, the Maxim Halloween parties. Mm. And they were some of the most fantastic events ever. Karma International just did everything so professionally, and it had all of our guys on radio comms, so you know we could plan shots for events and that kind of stuff. So yeah, that was like the next chapter was that whole part in USA doing Maxim and Playboy.
Just to interject as well, that must have been like going back to you building your social skills over this time now, obviously there's been a lot of growth, that must have massively desensitized you to very hot women, because I know for me, like I lived in New Zealand for a period as well, right, for 10 years, a third of my life now, and I lived on a hill in the middle of nowhere in North Island, and again, it's population, but you don't see that many girls that are
that stunning. And then that's to do with, there's many factors in New Zealand that have to do with that, you know, one of them majorly being the weather. Like there's not really a good beach, or like, you know, beaches aren't an amazing, like they're not super hot, and or fine sand, nothing like you'd see on the Gold Coast here.
No.
So, you know, girls are like, well, if there's no beach, I don't need to worry so much about like tanning and then like other beauty and like working out, training. And so you look at Australians, you look at New Zealanders, and it was like chalk and cheese, night and day. But New Zealand has, adopted a lot more of the things that American and Australian girls are doing, like more of them are getting their boobs done, their lips done, and looking after themselves more and learning makeup tutorials. And New Zealand has like really picked up their game in the last few years, but like 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that simply wasn't the case. There's nothing against the girls from New Zealand,
no,
but it was just the way that society was back then. But now social media has brought it into the light, like that people feel like they have to look and act a certain way in order to, you know, fit into society.
Yeah, which comes with its own problems when people go too far, as we've seen.
But going back to your question about being desensitized by the whole thing, yeah, that's true. I mean, early days, 2012, 2012, 2013, it was very exciting to me because I went from a guy with no social skills to all of a sudden hanging out with Paris Hilton. And
literally.
The
hottest models and celebrities.
Yeah, and I was like, wow, if you can go from, you know, it's just like I had a superpower that I never had before, you know? And over time, you do get used to it. And you're like, okay, cool. And models would say, oh, wow, you're so like chilled and you're so awesome to shoot with and you're so much fun. Because you have to be fun, you know? You have to have higher energy than whoever you're shooting or hanging out with always, I think. So, I guess over time, by the time it was like 2014, I was completely like okay with it. And sometimes, I mean, occasionally you'd have someone, some girl walk in and she'd do something and it would just blow you away and go, oh my God, this is like the best footage I've ever taken in my life. But at the same time, yeah, I didn't like have this, the same like fear of hot women that I would have had when I was like 21 years old, you know. I was cool, like being able to sit here and have a conversation with them. Whereas like in 2009, 2010, I was like terrified. I couldn't even walk up to them and say hello.
It's interesting, isn't it? That whole transition and how, and we talked about this before we turned on the podcast, like your experiences kind of create new levels or bars, if you will, or expectations to that. You know, it's like, oh, okay, now that's my level, that's the level I'm on. And it's not always about working higher, because sometimes that can get you into trouble because you put happiness on the horizon, as I always say. But it's just, I think for a lot of guys as well who want to get better for women, it's like try to surround yourself or put yourself in an environment like you did, whether it was, you know, by chance or not, where you have a purpose to be in that environment and realize that they are human beings. We are all human beings.
But yeah,
the look that's predicated on it can change the interaction and how you feel about it. But it's like, ultimately, they're human beings in the,
yeah,
they have conversations.
And I get a lot of questions from people outside of the modeling industry, people like who live the 9-to-5 jobs and they do what they do, right? And I don't want to put people in different baskets, but they always ask, oh, are they bitches or are they nice? And 95% of the models that I've worked with are amazing human beings. Some of the nicest people I've ever met. And it's a stereotype of, if you're beautiful, you must be a bitch. But it's not true. I think some women are bitches on different days because of different things going on in their lives or whatever, and or you don't meet their you know, criteria for them to want to spend their time and energy talking to you or whatever, and that's where the bitchiness comes from. It's literally because you haven't proved your value. If you've proved your value, no one will ever be a bitch to you. You know, they will always give you the time of day if you have proven your value.
Unless they're just having a bad day, which
unless they're just
there's sometimes a dichotomy there though as well, because I find they are, people either go, oh yeah, they're a bitch or they're not going to be approachable. I'm like, well, there's two ways this can go. Either one, depending on the level of how hot they are subjectively, they get approached all the time. So like you said, they're just trying to filter out. They're like, oh, here we go again. So if you come in being all fucking shy and she can see it a mile away, and women are sensory machines, as you know, they're much better at calibrating than us men.
Oh, yeah.
Wait, you're better to just be genuine and have a conversation with them and treat them as a human, you know, rather than trying to pussyfoot or say something stupid. Or the opposite is true, where I find she's that fucking hot subjectively, no one's fucking approach her, and she's the loveliest person. She's like, why does no one ever fucking talk to me? I'm like, because they're intimidated by you.
Yeah.
And then that's the worst, because I feel almost bad for them, because they're like, they think there's something fucking wrong with them.
Yeah, no.
But I'm like, no, no one's given them
all sorts of insecurities.
Or they're like, oh, you just talk to me normal. I'm like, yeah, why wouldn't I? You know, because she's like, well, people ask like this around me. I'm like, yeah. I'm like, unfortunately, the way you look deters people.
And I mean, that's when like negging came from. That's where the idea of negging came from. And negging is like something that is done very early days to try and early days in the pickup, you know, world, to try and claw their value down so it brings your value up. Like, oh, nice nails. Are they real? Oh, no. Well, they're still nice.
Yeah, exactly.
It's like it's a negative compliment, but it does work. It did work back then, but it only worked on the tens. If you were to use a neg on an 8 or a 9, like, you were gonna get slapped, because it's, especially if you neg a 6 or a 7, like, you're gonna get bollocking. So it only worked on the tens, but you know what I mean. It's, the game has changed so much now.
It's changed
so much, and it's less about like, it's less about the ABCDEFG 1, 2, 3 steps of like, oh, now I'm here, now I must do this, now I'm here, now I must do this. It's turned into, oh, do I have an ecosystem? Do I have a life that she would want to be a part of? And if you can show them, hey, this is like what my life, what I've got going on, you're welcome to come, take it or leave it. That's a whole different ball game than, you know, oh, hey, let's go get food here and let's go to four different venues in a night. And that, like, all of that stuff still sort of applies, like, you know.
In a roundabout way, but it's knowing when and how. It's not always, like you said, going from A to B to C. It can be going from A to Z to C to, and it's different because you might meet someone and you're at level D because of the way it interacts. You know what I mean? You don't always meet people at A. And as you said, it's changed so much. It's fleeting.
It's social
media.
You
don't need to change an alter ego. I mean, I created one like you, and it was just like, but it's a one-dimensional character in terms of, it's like, you, everything has to align with that. Because if that's only you for those hours or that night, like, that's going to get you so far, but it doesn't work. But nonetheless, great experience.
And that's why there's eight tentacles of the octopus, right? Like, you need to be... everyone is different around different people, right? Like, I'm different with my best friend than I am with, like, some of the girls I know, than I am with my parents. Everyone's different around different
you calibrate,
people.
And
it's, you calibrate, but you do sort of find yourself after... It takes a long time. Like, I didn't really find myself until I was, like, 25. Mm. You know, I had no idea. But then when I found myself, I felt then I could be around anyone and be the same. And some people didn't accept it as well as others, but that was just me. And all my friends would say, oh, no, that's just Alex. Like, you'll get used to it. That's just how he is. Mm. And, you know, but I was the brightest spoon in the dishwasher, you know?
Yeah. And that's the thing. Like, some people are just not compatible, but that's a good thing. I don't know if you've ever read much of Mark Manson's work.
He
does Subtle Art and Not Giving a Fuck. Yep. But he does one called Models. And that was on, like...
Mark Manion.
No, Mark Manson.
Manson is
M-A-N-S-O-N. Not Marilyn Manson. I know.
No. I was going to say Mark Manion, I think, wrote Subtle.
No, Mark Manson. Not Giving a Fuck. He's got...
I have read that one. There's a newer one of...
I've read it. Actually, that's what I'm trying to... Everything Sucks or Everything... I don't know. Everything's Fucked.
Yeah, Everything's Fucked. Yeah, I haven't read that yet.
Which, great reads, by the way, and great clickbait.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, the Subtle Art Not Giving a Fuck was something that got me through a time in my life, for sure. Yeah.
Sounds like we might be on the same page there, but we'll chat about that.
Definitely
in the podcast.
The same book. Yeah.
The same book. But I listened to his one or audiobook called Models after that, and this was after a lot of the pickup. You know, I read The Game, you know, the Natural Arts, fucking all that, you name it.
I did every DVD, right. Annihilation Method, Force Natural, Real Social Dynamics, right. Like everything, yeah.
Tyler did.
Once you get hooked, it's like
it's catnip.
You can never know enough. It's like, and sometimes you can go back and watch something and get refreshes, and you're like, oh my god, I can't believe I forgot about this habit, and it's been causing me problems. So
exactly,
it's
very true. And then again, you can get lost in all of the, you know, you're consuming but you're not applying. You know, it's like, I would argue that someone who just sits and consumes concept wouldn't be as good as someone who didn't consume any content and just actually was hanging around with women consistently all the time.
And practicing,
I think that would be much, you know.
That's true.
But
that's
if you can
true.
Find the balance, then obviously it's good. Because you got to, like, because you can just, like, you read, be like, you keep reading, you're not applying. It's like, read some, apply it, read some. Anyway.
Yeah, I think you're right there.
But, I was going to go back to, Models. And I always say to a lot of people, like, that's the most succinctly written piece on attraction that is well-rounded and to the point that I have read, and like you, reading a lot, listening a lot, now speaking, I have a lot of these people on my podcast, I've figured out, I'm like, you know what, he's really fucking done a great job of just kind of taking the 20% to give you the juice. And it's very applicable, it's very relatable as well.
Yeah.
And it turned out to be like one of his platinum bestsellers, but it was ultimately just kind of taking those concepts from what we've learned, which are a bit more, say, far-fetched or very nuanced or very specific, and he just kind of like packed it all in, blended it up, and went, there's the fucking Kool-Aid sort of thing.
Yeah.
in one respect. But let's talk about, you mentioned the eight tentacles, we talked about that. Give some context to the listeners and viewers around that and how that's kind of facilitating your bigger ecosystem your dream, your goal.
So that's it, right? It's the ecosystem in which, you know, you thrive. And what I realized on my journey was that I wanted to be a specific character, but if I just became that character, that's the box that I would be inside, and it would be very difficult to get out of that box. So I kind of realized, oh my god, I've actually got to create all these other pillars around me to support what I want to do, and that's kind of going to have to come last, you know what I mean? So now, okay, let's work on this, and that's kind of like the video production company. Like, in order to have all of these other things, I need to be able to produce all my own media. Mm. So getting the best photographers and videographers and editors on board and pulling it under an umbrella and creating that media company, that was that like one of the pillars, right? Mm-hmm. And none of my own personal DJing or any of my projects that I'm working on in the Spaz project, kind of, it's very separate, right? But then, you know, I've got EDM TV, which is the channel, which is where all the content sits. Mm-hmm. And then there's EDM TV Trips, which is a travel show on that network. And that's an ecosystem in itself, mm. you know, where we have experiences and we film content for brands and that kind of stuff, right? Mm. And that's where all the models come and enjoy the time. You can check out EDM TV Trips on Instagram mm. and have a look at all the beautiful like shots we've done with mm. all the awesome products and models over the last year or so. Mm. Obviously, a lot harder to do because of COVID, you know. Yeah. But we found a way around it. You know, mm. we saw COVID as an opportunity for us to spend some extra time on setting the foundations, what we needed, and now as things are easing up, we can activate on that. We would have never got all of that done if we were just zipping around the world, you know. So kind of a blessing and a curse for us. But yeah, so I've got all these different projects and all these different things, and Catnip's one of them too, and I've got a few new ones that are coming very soon, which I can't talk about yet. But they all support my main dream, which is Spaz. Spaz is my avatar, right? VJ Spaz, DJ Spaz, whatever you want to call it. Mm-hmm. But that's where I want to be, you know, creating my own music, my own visual experience. And I've got an amazing company based out of Las Vegas called Immersive Experiential, and they're sending me a giant dome that fits 5,000 people. And it takes 24 projectors to illuminate the interior surface of the dome.
Jesus.
And I'm working with these.
How are they sending this?
In 3 shipping containers.
Wow.
It's portable and inflatable.
It's like the ultimate toy.
It takes 6 days to blow up the dome and 3 days to deflate it.
The fuck.
So it's a big venue.
That is like, blowing my mind.
And we're going to project my visuals all around it and tell a story of the creation of the universe.
That will be.
And
a
we've got the symphony
trip.
Orchestra on board, so we're going to have like an 80-piece orchestra inside this dome with the most amazing visuals ever, oh. packed out with models.
Where are you gonna launch the first dome?
Well, I've already opened a few conversations with quite a few different people around the world who have found the land for me already. I mean, I'm talking like Brisbane, yeah, Melbourne, yeah. Sydney, Major cities. New Zealand, Hawaii. Mm. So yeah, I've got these locations almost locked in place. So I know where and how this is going to happen, but I can't just like focus on that right now. That's it. All the hard work is done there, if you know what I mean. But I need to complete my mission first before I go down that rabbit hole. Mm. But yeah,
it will be a rabbit hole.
The Spaz Dome is going to be like my life's like completion. When that thing exists, like I'll feel like, okay, I'm done now. Like,
I can sign out.
I'm done.
If I go, I'll be a happy man.
Yeah, exactly.
That's cool.
But that is the vision.
That is one hell of a vision, my friend, and that will be quite the spectacle. I don't think I've ever seen anything
not really.
That in the, you know, the visual world or the music world. I mean, it's a great idea.
I mean, yeah.
The closest thing I ever seen, actually, because I'm just, you know, as you're talking, I'm thinking, and I'm going through my memory bank. George Michael, of all artists, who unfortunately has passed away, he did one of his last concerts. He had the stage, and say, like, imagine almost like it's like a strip, and it went all the way up, and it went. And then it sort of like, it's like a waterfall, right? But the whole stage was a TV.
Yeah.
But you didn't know that. And then through the show, it would change. But obviously you can imagine a TV that fucking big. And the visuals that were created with him on it were just unbelievable. But obviously you're doing that in a dome in a 3D space. So you can just create any image, especially with now the technology.
Yeah.
Any imagery. I mean, that would just be like obscene to even just visually see.
Of the artists we have on our team are like the best 3D artists in the world. The absolute best of the best at what they do.
You're on a different planet.
Oh, no. We're taking people to another dimension. This thing is going to be like nothing anyone has ever experienced in their entire life.
Alex. we create
the platform. We don't do any of that. We're creating an environment and people can do what they want to do, but I don't condone any type of drugs or illicit behavior inside my venue.
No, exactly. Well, the thing is, like, I always argue you don't, if you can tap into the mind's eye, you don't need it.
Well, that's right.
Because we've had the natural minerals inside us, but it's
right, dimethyltryptamine.
Yeah, and it's unlocking all of that.
That's right.
And it's like when you train, hit a dopamine. You know what I mean? There's like ghrelin, leptin. It's like, well, how can you elicit that response in the body? You know, well, it's like, well, you have to provide a stimulus.
That can actually be achieved with Kundalini yoga. And I learned Kundalini, and it's these breathing techniques. And I've had full on like psychedelic trips just by breathing the right way. So it's Kundalini is definitely something that you should look into if you want to level up.
I have a friend, actually a good friend, he's been on it, he's a psychologist, and he's big into that too, the he was telling me about it. It's amazing what the body can achieve. But it's even like breathing as well, like you said, understanding the breathing. I mean, look at, like, have you heard of Tomo, which is the where you increase your body temperature, which is part of what Wim Hof learned.
I'm familiar with Wim Hof's work.
Yeah, so that's
and I did ice plunging every day for a year.
There you go.
Yeah.
Well, that's part of it as well. There's so many things that you can do naturally if you know how to change the rhythm and you understand how to. It's almost like biohacking in some ways.
It really is. Like, your body's response. I mean, talking specifically about cold plunging, because I did this for an entire year. I do Kundalini for like 40 minutes in the morning, jump in a cold pool, go to the gym for 2 hours, and then I'd learn chess and Japanese and all these other things I had going on afterwards. But that was kind of like my daily routine. When you first start out doing the cold dipping, you are like, oh shit, this is gonna be cold. Oh no, this is gonna suck. Oh fuck. And then you jump in and you're like, oh, you start freaking out and whatever. Hard. And you're like, it's cold. But after about a month of doing it, you just jump straight in. You know what to expect. Yep, no problem. Yep, this is uncomfortable. And don't get me wrong, it doesn't ever get comfortable. But you know what to expect. And then I realized, like, oh my god, what? Now that I can just jump into a cold shower or jump into a cold water at any time, it translated to all other areas of my life where I like that initial fear of an approach or the fear of picking up the phone and talking to someone, all of that went away because I'd already done the most difficult thing that I possibly could do with my body that day.
I couldn't agree more. I started a cold showers years ago and I still do it to this day. Yeah. Even no matter where I am, hotel, whatever, I'm just like, cold shower. It's just how I start my day. It's like my anchor. I don't know what it is, but and like you said, it's like everything after that is easy.
Everything after that is easy,
You know, it's like you said, and I think there is like this, I mean, based on like the physiology as well, there's definitely you build resilience, you know, you build up sort of, again, it's a mental resilience and then the physical resilience too, which then, like you said, translates to everything.
It's biohacking, yeah.
Very much so. Spaz, so that came from, I want to talk more about that, you know, you created the alter ego. Why Spaz? Where did that name come from? What does it represent to you?
So I was doing the whole videography thing in Wellington, and one of the top DJs, DJ Shan, what up Shan, said, he used to call me Kid.
He's not British, is he?
It was like Alex the Kid. No, he's not. It was like Alex the Kid. Because I came from a video gaming background, he said, Kid, can you do like visuals? Can you VJ? And I was like, no, what's VJing? So I looked it up. And I was like, okay, I need this and this. So I borrowed all of the equipment, downloaded the software and downloaded some clips and stuff like that. And I put a set together in my friend's lounge and it was fucking everywhere.
Is it a visual jam?
Visual jockey.
Visual jockey.
Yeah, that's what a VJ is. Like a DJ's a disc jockey, a VJ's a visual jockey. I basically put this kit together. Oh, this is a funny story. Okay, so I put this kit together in my friend's lounge and I was like, when I hit this button, a spiral is gonna come up on the screen. So I hit the button, the spiral came up. I'm like, hell yeah, this is awesome. Hit this button, it's gonna be zigzags. And it was zigzags. And I was like, yeah, this is cool. Okay, I've got it going. So I said, yeah, Shan, I can VJ now, I think. And he goes, cool, man. We've got this gig at the Wellington the Duxton Hotel.
Yeah.
And there's gonna be like 600 kids, like a fifth form ball. So I borrowed a hard drive with all these visuals off my friend and I borrowed a mixer off another friend and everything, and I had everything ready to go, and I went to the school ball and set up to VJ on a big 300-inch screen in the ballroom at the Duxton.
Cool.
And I'm VJing away and I'm like, yeah, this is cool. And I'm VJing away, yeah, this is cool. And then I like had run out of stuff to play. So I was like, oh, what's on the hard drive? So I'm like, and I didn't have like a preview monitor at the time. So I was just like, I'd play something. I'm like, that's cool. And then I put a clip onto the screen and it was porn. And this chick was getting demolished and she was breathing fire at the same time. And I looked up and I was like, oh no. Visual. And then I went to drag the clip off and the program crashed. So instead of her getting banged like this, she was getting banged like
like this, and the whole crowd was like, oh, and I was like, shit. So I ripped the cable out, like screws and everything, just ripped it out, and then it was just this blue screen with no signal. No signal. And everyone was like, yeah, like clapping, and all the teachers like, rrr. And so I like hid under the stage. I was just like, no. Didn't get paid for the job.
Oh, shit. So you didn't get the invite next year?
No, but that was the beginning of my VJ career. But I still enjoyed the process. And
who was the friend who gave you the hard drive? You gave me the wrong hard drive.
VJ Mindfuck. Damn you, Cameron.
he fucking knew. Yeah, he was like, yeah,
I
play that.
I used to sit next to him at work. But yeah, so that was kind of like a funny story that kicked off my VJing career. But at the time, a lot of my visuals were inspired by video games, and so that's why I was like Alex the Kid. But then I realized, oh, I don't want to be like 25 or 30 years old and be known as Alex the Kid. That just wouldn't work. So I went to a wine festival with my friend, and he was a DJ named Dirty Needles. Dirty Needles. And we got lit, man. We were like lying in the grass, like just yarning. And I was like, man, why Dirty Needles? Where'd you get that from? And he said, oh, well, it's a play on words, right? Like Dirty Needle is just something that's just totally filthy. Like you'd never pick up a dirty needle off the ground, like, you know, or a used needle. It's just the most filthy thing you could think of. And the music that he played kind of reflected that. He was a dubstep DJ and everything was super grimy. It was just Dirty Needles. It was just great, right?
Yeah. And it kind of, it has a ring to it.
And like,
right?
I think like vinyl was also played with a needle. So like, maybe that had something to do with it. But yeah, I was just in the grass and I was wasted. And I thought to myself, oh, Spasmataz. Oh, like my friend was called Razzmatazz in the game that I played. But I thought Spasmataz, that's kind of cool. And then I was like, wow, that is actually like, all my stuff is quite spazzy, you know what I mean? And girls, I told a few people about it, and girls couldn't say it, Spasmataz. It was just too long, so I just shortened it to Spaz. But Spaz in the dictionary means to lose emotional and physical control. So just like, ah, what the fuck was that? You know, like that's the body just has spaz. Yeah, so, and I thought, fuck, that's pretty much my artwork to a T, right? It's just, this, whoa, what is going on here? And I thought, that's kind of who I am, and you know, I've even got it tattooed on me now.
Let's see.
There we go.
Hey,
got the Spaz tattoo.
Even in the actual font,
the actual logo, yeah.
So it's double Z.
To the point where I was like, okay, that's my identity now, you know, and that's kind of how.
Because you got it on your number plates as well, don't you?
Yeah, it's on the number plates. Yep. But you know, I just feel like that. The name has to reflect the feeling or the energy of something. It's really important. And Spaz, just when you see the new Spaz episodes, so on EDM TV Network, which is the TV channel, I have my own show in there called Spaz, and it's like a 1 hour psychedelic trip. It's an hour long experience. And I got two of them now. I'm working on a third episode. And these visuals are like, just crazy. We've got fractals, mathematic, kaleidoscopic, you know, nature.
How do you create like, something
all sorts
like that?
Of stuff?
Like from like an organic, or is it just a mix of visuals?
There's so much. Yeah, there's so many different pieces of software that are involved. But fractals are created using mathematical equations in a program called Mandelbulb. Another one we have in Touch Designer called the Frag Tool, and then we have After Effects that puts on like glows and haze and saber and that kind of stuff, and then obviously everything's edited together in Adobe Premiere. Textures are made in Photoshop, 3D models are made in Cinema 4D, and one of my spazlings, Carl's my spazling, he creates his stuff in like Blender, and there's all these different pieces of software, and then there's all these other visual artists around the world that create their stuff too. And I actually got brought on by the owner of the VJ Union, the Video Jockey Union, with 15,000 members, to create their yearly promo reel. So he sent me like terabytes of content from all these artists from around the world and said, mash it together and make this thing once a year.
Fuck yeah.
So I have like an unlimited database of 3D visuals. It's crazy. So, wow. And when you mix them together, it creates completely new
Combinations. Kind of like notes on a guitar or a piano. You can just keep fucking doing different effects and different, and you keep getting a different
literally
end product.
Got to the point where I was like, how many layers can I put up on top of each other before I crash my computer? And then like, well, it's 14, you know?
Oh, well, there you go.
Yeah. So, you know, sometimes it just gets so messy and crazy and so spazzy that it's just like, what the hell is going on? Your brain's trying to figure out what's happening. And what it actually does when you watch Spaz on EDM TV is that it opens your mind up because you've been given all these new possibilities. It's like massaging your brain. And I mean, like,
is it like listening to certain music at a certain pace? You know, it increases the brain frequency.
That's
But then the visual does another.
Very much so. And we do take, you know, those frequencies into account as well in some of the soundtracks. So it is kind of like that. And it is specifically done in a journey. My business partner constantly says, you got to give them the coffee beans. Like, the coffee beans is like something that's just so horrible and shit. Like, that just like, oh God, why the hell is this happening? Ah, and then you play something beautiful and peaceful straight after that, and it's 10 times more beautiful and peaceful because you gave them the coffee beans.
You know? The contrast. Well, that is the philosophy behind any great piece of music, which I learned from playing the piano. It's the whole, you have, it's called tension and release, you know, and you sort of like, you anticipate, you're like, there's the chorus, you know. Yeah. And like pop music is very simple. But then when you have really intricate music, when it's done well, it's world class. And you don't know why you feel a certain way, but subconsciously it kind of, again, it taps into that.
Tension and release. Yeah.
It's fucking cool.
It's like that too. It's kind of a roller coaster. It's just like, you're not sure where you're going to go at any point in time. It could just transform into something completely different. But yeah, wait till you guys see Spaz on EDM TV. It's going to be a trip.
It's going to be fucking sick, man. And I guess before we get into the my final questions, some things that would be pretty cool to share is, what are some of the, I guess, the most memorable moments that you've had within your career at the moment? Something that you're like, wow, I'm never going to forget this. This is amazing. Versus, to contrast it, maybe one of the most challenging.
Yeah, like one of the most memorable moments of my entire career, and this goes with my VJing as well, was actually going to EDC, which was the Electric Daisy Carnival in Las Vegas in 2012 with my buddy Dean, and we were making the official behind the scenes documentary for V Squared Labs and for Insomniac, who run EDC, and we got to go there a week early and help film them all setting up the big LED like stages, the biggest stage in North America. I mean, it's millions, tens of millions of dollars of equipment on big cranes. Absolutely crazy. But to stand in the middle with my camera between the best VJ in the world and the best lighting technician in the world, and they're like, ready, Alex? Yeah, 3, 2, 1, and all the lights going off and the fireworks and everything. It was just like the most surreal experience, standing there in the center of like 300,000 people, you know, or whatever it was. It was just like unreal. But then for him to give me a go, like on the visuals, I'm like, oh my God, I'm featuring the main stage of EDC. Like, what the fuck? So that was definitely a highlight.
The energy would have been unreal.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, being on stage with people like Avicii at Ultra Music Festival, being on stage with, you know, Feed Me, I got to VJ. They set up the VJ booth alongside the DJ booth at a studio in Auckland in front of 1,000 people, and I was on the stage with Feed Me, who was like one of my favorite, he still is one of my favorite artists. Being on the stage with him was like a rush, a total rush. Yeah. And we're jumping up and down, high-fiving, and that was like, I felt like that's what it's like to be a superstar DJ. But I'm just doing the visuals, but that's what it feels like. So that was my first time in front of a big crowd. I mean, I played an Ellerslie race course on like 520 screens.
Ellerslie
race course, 520 screens. My visuals are everywhere across this whole race course.
Jesus.
And I was like, this is fucking sick.
Yeah. You know? Well, like, to see your work up there.
This is everywhere. I'm like, that's dope. Going back to the modeling world, I mean, Maxim Halloween was just incredible because the production value and all of the decor and people's outfits, and the women were just so gorgeous, and like everything about it, the food, the candy, that it was an experience in itself. And I'd love to do something similar for Catnip Halloween. So that's something that I want to work on as soon as I can.
I'm a big Halloween fan. It's a great thing.
Halloween is
fucking cool.
It's an excuse for everyone to get lit and get dressed up and have a good time. So Halloween, definitely one of my favorite
times. I mean, you know, there's so many memories and it really is hard to pinpoint like what exactly, you know, were the most amazing moments. But I mean, some of the worst moments, you know, some of the, I guess, heartbreak I experienced along the way. I met someone that really broke my heart and it took me months to recover from that. Mm. And it was just a series of shit events, one after another, but it happened at the Halloween party, Maxim Halloween party. It was a year later, so it was a different night than the good one. But yeah, lost my $12,000 camera. My business partner lost his camera with all the footage on it in the same night. Wow. So I lost the job, lost the girl. Like my I made major mistakes and it took months to get back on top. After that, you know, I was just absolutely heartbroken. I didn't really find love or the ability to love for like a year and a half or even 2 years since that. So yeah, that happened in like 2016. So I just didn't even want to communicate with women for a while. It was just this horrible time of my life, really. Mm. And that's when I like started losing my hair. And I had the same haircut as you 1 year ago. Mm-hmm. I was shaving my head with a razor every single day. And I had a hair transplant. So that was a way for me to get like my life, I feel like my life back, my confidence back. Mm-hmm. And inner confidence has changed so much over the last year going through this transformational period. And that was, yeah, that's been like the craziest journey almost I could ever imagine. But now, just as of this week, I've been, you know, shooting again. I've been doing like, you know, like I've been going out, talking to people, meeting people. I had this period where I was just underground, working on my TV network, going to the gym, just working on myself, working on my mental health. And now I feel like I've blossomed into the, like, you know, come out of the cocoon, so to speak. And, you know, we're ready for the next round.
Yeah, that's awesome, dude. I mean, and those, you know, adversities in life are often some of the best teachings, although at the time they are not nice to live or even go back and relive, but they're I call them character building times in our life.
Yeah.
Which usually, like you said before, you know, you said a key thing, you said accept what comes your way in the universe. You know, accept is the key word there, I believe, in my opinion, because you have to take ownership for that. Like some things are just out of your control and it's like the obstacle is the way. It's like, okay, well, I can't change this, but I can focus on this. What can I learn from it? What is within my control? And how can I then, you know, pay that forward or like make it my strength, not my weakness? So
exactly.
That's why I like to ask this question, because I think it's very interesting what people sort of come up with and what they learn from those adversities.
Yeah, like sometimes life just hits you hard and you know, you can fall off the horse 7 times as long as you get back up 8 times.
Mm-hmm.
That's what my mum told me.
This is true, man, and it's a good philosophy. Now, on to the final questions that I ask all my guests. They're a bit more lighthearted,
sure.
They're a bit more fun, etc. The first one is relevant because you've been to a lot of places, you know, been to a lot of glamorous places around the world, obviously COVID. It's been a bit hard, you've worked around it. So where is, I usually ask, where would you wake up if you could wake up anywhere in the world tomorrow? But I want to ask, where's one of your favorite places in the world to wake up, and or is there any places you've not been to that you want to wake up at?
Okay, yeah, wow. You know what? There's something about Paris. Paris, like, it was just incredible. Paris was amazing. Even though, yeah, we had the craziest time in Paris. I did Paris Fashion Week. There's just something about that city. It's so romantic and so, like, beautiful. Like, yeah, it's a pretty cool place, but Monaco is amazing too. Oh, you know, I filmed the Monaco Formula One Grand Prix on a super yacht, and there's just this energy about the whole place, and it's just, there's so much wealth there, you know. Monaco's great.
That's my dream.
Yeah.
Formula One was my first dream, and Monaco was like,
pinnacle. It was absolutely pinnacle. But yeah, I've got my eyes on Dubai. Would love to go check that out because I've only been to the airport, but it looks like the most futuristic, crazy city. I just think Dubai would just be amazing. Mm. That's somewhere I'd want to go. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I mean, New Zealand though, home. I actually didn't realize how beautiful and amazing it was until I went away. And then you go back to New Zealand and go, wow, like why don't I come back here more often and bring my friends here? Yeah, so New Zealand really is one of the best places to wake up. But yeah, my really, really big goals, I really have to see Egypt. I really want to go to all of the ancient sites, and especially Peru, South America. I want to go to Machu Picchu, Göbekli Tepe, all of those sites. And I want to see the Nan Madol, which is an ancient site just outside of like, Papua New Guinea, I think, and it's like this crazy island with these 50-ton stones that was like definitely built by aliens. So I have to go see that for myself. But yeah, I want to go see all the sites that you'll see on the, like on the TV show, the Ancient sort of Aliens. Yeah.
Yeah, well, it's fucking very cool, actually.
I love that show.
It's, yeah, very fascinating indeed. And it just, it elicits so much curiosity as well. There's got to be, it's like, what else? There's got to be something
yeah,
else.
Yeah, right? there is definitely, we were visited by aliens thousands and thousands of years ago, and they messed with the human genome, and they gave us technology, and I strongly believe this all.
There's things that are just unexplainable, really, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, in terms of the landmarks and the technology advances, it just, if you put it together with a little bit of logistics, it's the same stories
in different religions told in different languages all around the world by beings coming from the sky and teaching us and mating with humans. And there's the stories told everywhere, and there's all these figures that show up in different pieces of artwork, and they're all similar, like the guy with the two staves, and there's just all these things, and it makes you wonder, like, our ancestors would have written it down for a purpose, or they wouldn't have done it at all. But not just that, my thirst for knowledge and you know, the wanting to travel, I also want to find someone to travel with. I need that, like, partner in crime, someone that is interested in the same things, that wants to come and be a part of that journey. I think that is, like, I would rather wake up to that than wake up to a nice view. You know what I mean?
The companionship.
Because it's very difficult to find someone who, like, is on the same wavelength as me, because I'm on such a crazy wavelength. I have all these different projects, and I'm always moving around and traveling. And you know, you meet a girl, and she's got her job, so she can't come away for a month or two to blah. You know, met a girl in Italy, and I'm like, oh, we're going to Spain tomorrow, you want to come? Oh, I can't, I've got my cats, and I've got, like, all the stuff. And, like, you know, it's very difficult to find someone that can actually be a part of that frequency. And I know for a fact, like, the next partner I'm going to have is someone that I can, that, like, work with. Like, she's part of the team that travels with us, and, you know, like, work and play together kind of thing, because I think that's super important. I can't just be with someone who's got, like, their own thing going on here, and then I go away for 6 months and come back, or whatever happens. It has to be, like, the same pathway, the same journey.
It needs to be in alignment.
Yeah,
absolutely, couldn't agree more with that one, man. And that's something that kind of goes against, you know, people, you need someone, it's either completely the same or different, or chalk, and he's like, oh no, I think at the core of it, you need certain ethics and values or traits to align. Otherwise, like you said, like, yeah, it's all good for a bit of fun, but then when you're looking for that companionship and bond, you know, you need someone, the best way is, like you said, someone on the same frequency, pretty much, man, on the same, the same spazosphere as you.
Yeah, that's
just
it.
Just made that word up, we'll use that.
Spazosphere.
Spazosphere, that's it. There's your new track, spazosphere. you've heard it here, folks. The second question is, if you could choose a superpower, what would it be and why? And you can make one up.
Oh, man, honestly, I think I'm already onto it, but the ability to share this spaz magic, to be able to plug into that, almost like virtual reality, to share the experience of what I see in my head when these visuals take me down my own rabbit hole, I'd love to just be able to share that with everyone. I think that's what the Dome is all about, and the VR project. I think that would be an amazing superpower, is just the bzzz, and then all of a sudden people go, whoa, okay, that is awesome. You know, but flying would be cool, because, you know, flying, you could pretty much achieve anything if you can fly, right? But
yeah, well, it's like, I guess the first part of that, like, you're just giving people a glimpse inside your mind.
Yeah, you know, that's, like, the other thing. Being able to read minds is one that people often say it would be a cool superpower. But being able to read minds would probably also be a negative thing. I think you would learn a lot of stuff that you didn't want to know, so I'd rather fly than read minds.
Absolutely.
What about you? What would you have?
See, it's hard, but I'm influenced by the last podcast I did last night, and it's one of the most underrated superpowers, but the most powerful, and it is the need not to sleep and still function.
I've already got that one.
Right? And I'm just like, that'd be sick if you never had to fucking sleep and, like,
eight hours a day,
a vampire, like, fully, like, optimum, like, didn't age and, like, didn't sleep, didn't have to sleep. Think about how much you get done. You literally double your lifespan.
But then the question I ask is, why do you want to get so much done?
Well, there's not so much done, but there's so much to experience.
Yeah.
Right? Do you know what I mean?
And then and that we only have 80 years, right?
But that's it. But then that's predicated on then you ask the question, which is one of my other questions I ask. I'm like, would you be immortal or would you not be immortal? And then that opens up another can of worms.
Well, we are immortal at the end of the day. I mean, this current flesh puppet that I inhabit for this whatever time I spend
flesh
on this planet.
Puppet.
Planet.
That's
yeah, this is a flesh puppet, right? Yeah. Like people say, you know, we are, you know, human beings trying to cope with a spiritual awakening, but actually we're spiritual beings trying to cope with a human awakening.
Mm.
And I believe in past lives, future lives, parallel universes, being able to astral travel and dream, and those are all existing places. Like our soul can really travel interdimensionally between all of these places, and if you've ever done DMT, you understand what I mean. But Joe Rogan talks about that quite a bit on his podcast. Mm. But like, basically, you can transport to anywhere in the universe, and there are so many other dimensions out there. So I truly 100% believe that my soul, once this current body dies, it's going somewhere else and it's just going to continue. I think we're all immortal. I think we're also all connected. There's like one giant source that we all sort of go back to, and we are one with everything. And it's just this beautiful white place of love and connectivity, and it's there. And that's where we go when we die.
Mm, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree with a lot of that. There's got to be more. And the more you understand about that and unlocking it, and again, we talked about spirituality and biohacking and what the body can actually do. We have scratched the surface of the capabilities. There's definitely a lot of merit to that. So
yeah.
I guess we'll find out sooner or later, right? Or people who are open and willing to it. If we're not sort of so plugged in and oblivious or ignorant to what is possible, but most people are just overstimulated by things that are just a band-aid or a mask to the real experiences that exist in life, I feel, kind of to add on to that.
That is true. And, you know, The Matrix is a great representation of that. And they've got the new Matrix coming in December, which I'm looking forward to, the fourth Matrix movie. But,
sick.
You know, you're right. There is a current global human awakening that's happening right now, and people are all starting to realize there's a massive global shift.
Mm.
And I think COVID has actually accelerated that.
Absolutely.
And there's this huge community of people now who are sort of like trying their best to decipher the system and why the system was built and how it was built. And a lot of people are waking up to the fact that we are living inside of this giant system. I mean, I won't say I'm a conspiracy theorist, but I will say that, you know, everything happens for a reason, and everything is like premeditated. There's like obviously higher forces in this world that we aren't even aware of that condone, you know, day-to-day life for us all. So it's going to be exciting to see what happens in the near future.
Yeah, definitely.
I think this is the best time to be alive right now.
It's exciting because it's almost like, what's the next thing, you know? And I feel like a lot of things are coming to a head, you know, with science and research and the way, like, we are interacting as humans. It's, yeah, I don't know. I feel like there's something, and obviously COVID, let's not even get into that, but like you said, there's some premeditations there. But, yeah, things are going to be unfolding interestingly in the next 5 to 10 years, I would say.
Most definitely.
Especially with evolution as well, with even our evolution, but also that of, you know, technology. And
we're going to Mars in the next 2 years.
Yeah, literally. Well, look at Branson had the, what is it now? His Virgin Galactic.
Exactly. We can go to space for $100,000, $250,000 tops, maybe. Yeah.
It's going to get there.
It's going to get there, yeah.
It's only a matter of time, but you go, you want Mars, are you? Yeah, I'm on Mars and Venus. And like, oh, yeah, all right. Oh, where's the concert? Venus. All right, cool. That's what Spaz is playing this night. Okay, cool.
Yeah. He's playing on Mars today. You should come.
Yeah, literally. But that will be, you know, we laugh about that, but people laughed about the mobile, and now look at us. So.
Yeah, exactly. Right. It's interesting. Yeah, technology changes so fast. We just got to keep up with it.
This is it. The last rapid fire question is, if you could advise people to do one thing each day which would benefit their health, mentally, psychologically, physiologically, whatever you want to put it, what is the one thing that you would recommend for people to do?
Self-affirmation. Because the words we say and what they mean hold power. And if you say something to yourself that is negative, that's going to translate through the frequencies in your body and everything on a harmonic level, on a spiritual level, on a self-love level, and you're going to start believing that and telling yourself that over and over again, and you get sucked down a vortex of, you know, the feedback loop from hell from Mark Manson's book. Mm-hmm. And if you wake up every day and you tell yourself, I am awesome, I am amazing, then your life is going to be much better. And I really want everyone to go on Spotify and look up the Galactic Mantra by Liquid Soul, the Liquid Soul remix mm-hmm. of Galactic Mantra. And it is like, there's a 3 minute long speaking segment before the music starts, and that's all that really matters is that. And I listen to that every day for like several years, and every single time I listen to this thing, it makes me realize that I am a god. Mm. You know, and it gives you that spaz magic.
I like it.
That you need in your life.
Spaz magic.
So yeah.
Well, fucking I'm gonna link that in to the description.
That is,
and the show notes.
Something else.
That's awesome, dude.
Thank you.
I actually can't wait to listen to that, man. And my final question that I ask all my guests, which is a bit more serious in nature, which is, can you identify, and you've talked about a few of them here, but a fear in your life, what it is or what it was, if you're still working through it, and what you've learned or what are you learning from this particular fear?
Fear of rejection was a massive one for me, right? Growing up with like Asperger's syndrome and not really like being able to communicate properly with people or fit into a particular group, I guess, or being accepted by society, and then being given the superpower of being able to talk to people and have conversations and have the confidence to go up to the most beautiful woman in the world and like and interact with them and have all of these wonderful interactions that I've had. Once I got over that fear of rejection, it still remains, like, you know, it's something that'll never go away, because like I just constantly crave acceptance from everyone. And it's really like, a lot of people have told me that as soon as I can figure out how to get rid of that, I will just transform and be a completely new person. And I try my fucking best, but it doesn't matter how hard I try, there's always this need and that crave for other people's like attention and acceptance. And it's a really, really hard one, because as soon as you stop seeking it, it will come to you. Mm. Because it's like the cat string theory that we talked about earlier, right? Mm. Mm. If you dangle a string in front of a cat, it'll go nuts for the string. But if you drop the string, the cat's not interested and just walks away. Mm-hmm. I just throw the strings. Like, man, I'm just dropping the string everywhere. Like,
yeah,
you know what I mean?
Literally.
Left, right, and center. And I really just got to come over that fear of acceptance or unacceptance and work on that a little bit more.
Yeah. No, 100%, man. I think that's a great way to end what's been, mate, a really spastastic conversation. To be fair, no, it's had lots of ebbs and flows to it, man. It's been really interesting, really insightful. I've enjoyed it. It's been real, man. For people who want more, they want to follow along, you know, they want to get on to a lot of the content that you've mentioned, please plug away. Obviously, we'll put these links in the show notes in the description, but where can people find you for people
listening?
Yeah,
guys, like now? At Alex Kirsten on Instagram, mm-hmm. At Catnip on Instagram, CATNIP, at Catnip Ent, CATNIP, ENT, mm-hmm. At EDM TV Trips, which is the travel show. VJ Spaz is going to have a new website, stuff like that when I'm ready. And that's where you'll be able to check out the merch and check out, you know, the episodes and download them all. But guys, the biggest one is EDM TV. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. EDMTV.net. When that launches, it's, you know, we're going to change the world.
Yeah, I'm excited. It sounds very, very cool indeed. And it's probably going to revolutionize the platform. Like you said, it's something different and it's going to solve a lot of problems. So it's going to be awesome.
That's right.
Man, it's been real.
Thanks,
I appreciate
Alex.
It. It's been great catching up. Yes, the two ACs in the house. And guys, for everyone listening, I appreciate it. Thank you very much. I'll ask a small favor, as some of you have already done. If it's safe to do so, leave a rating and a review. iTunes, Spotify, it helps the channel grow. You know, if you liked it, share it, pay it forward. Pay it with someone. Pay it forward to someone who's going to have an interest in this. And of course, if you are on YouTube, I've got to say it, like, comment, subscribe, all that sort of stuff.
Subscribe.
Exactly, because I'll put that little pop-up button. It'll come up near one of the ACs right now. Exactly. And, of course, until the next episode, Stay fearless.
Spares out.
For those of you who are confused, frustrated, and sick and tired of not seeing the results that you want or deserve, make sure that you click the Apply for Coaching button in the description below and line up a completely free consultation with myself where we can discover if it's a good fit as client and coach and take your health and physique to the next level once and for all.